Paulina I'm an addict.
This
is the obligatory part where I tell you that I'm nervous. Hi. I'm just going to take a minute and settle in here. It's really nice to be here. I just have a lot of gratitude for being asked to come out and speak. It was a little funny how it happened. The person who sent the email last year, they were in charge of the Serenity Keepers. So when I saw the email come in asking for service, I was like, oh, shit, I don't want to be a Serenity Keeper again. So I was, like, so relieved that he wasn't asking me to do that I just said yes. And I was like, oh, shit, what did I just get myself into? Because not that there's anything wrong with being a Serenity Keeper, it's just not well-suited to my skill set. And I'll just leave it at that. I'm too nice and I don't care about rules for that job. So... he also asked if there was anyone that I might want to speak with, and so I took that opportunity to throw my sponsor under the bus. So I feel really lucky and honored today to be able to be here with my sponsor and to do this together. And then the icing on the cake was to have Noah come and secretary for us, because Noah and I actually share a clean date. And we discovered this year as Noah celebrated his first year. We were standing around after a meeting. Sorry, Noah. Noah loves attention. We're standing around after a meeting and we're both talking about how our anniversaries are coming up. And I was like, oh, mine too. Like, when's yours? And he's like, January 18th. And I was like, no way. And so Noah was so sweet. He drove all the way across town on my anniversary to come to the meeting that I celebrated at.
I didn't drive, I took the bus.
He took the bus, which is even worse if you live in D.C. But so it's really nice to be here with people that love me so much. I just came from a workshop that my friends led about recovery being a process, and they got me in that really good, squishy, emotional heart space. So just bear with me. I'm in that squishy, emotional heart space, and I'll probably cry. So this topic is the eighth tradition and the eighth step, which those two things have in common the number eight. So I will speak about them very separately. And that's just how it's going to be. So I really struggled with the topic, because when I get topics like a step or a tradition, it feels a lot like a book report, you know, because it's like I want to be on the topic, so I want to do all the reading that I can do about it, but I also want to relate it to like my life. And with traditions, that can sometimes be more of a challenge than others. So I started reading and doing some looking at the eighth tradition, which I'll read it again for you, because if you're like me, I was sitting right here and I just couldn't remember it, and I was like, oh my god, I just can't remember the tradition at all, and I'm about to speak about it. It says, Narcotics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. So when I thought about this, I'm like, how am I supposed to talk about this in any relevant or meaningful way? So I started talking to people in my network about it and doing some readings. And I came to that there's a few parts to this tradition. One is that we may employ special workers, which I think for me as like an individual member is really kind of cool to think about, like how I fit into this larger fellowship of NA as a whole, right? Like, we are a very far-reaching program. Like, there are meetings in China, in Iran, and like all over the fucking planet, and that is largely because of these special workers. So on a really like cognitive level, like, this is really important, because we can create like World Service Office, which I know on the East Coast we like to dog on the WSO, but they do a lot of work on behalf of NA as a whole, such as translating our literature, getting it to the hands of addicts, like in these far-reaching corners of the earth that like we as individual members of groups just can't do. And like to think that my dollar in the basket somehow trickles up and goes to support that, like that's really big for me, you know, and it makes me feel really proud of the organization that I've chosen to spend a large part of my life with. And it also looks at like the limits of our skill set, right? Like, we do one thing. We help people get off drugs. Like, we have a primary purpose. You know, our third tradition says the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop using. Like, that is all it takes to come here, you know? And we do one thing, like, to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. Like, we are not accountants. We are not doctors. We are not lawyers. We are not any of those things. Like, we are just individual members trying to help one another, you know, like, and there's, that's beautiful, you know, and it also recognizes that sometimes we're going to have to go outside of us to get some of that professional stuff done. So if my area service body needs help balancing its, like, books, then maybe we have to hire an accountant to do that, you know, and, like, that's okay. And that's the tradition that allows us to do that. So to recognize those things. But then, on a more personal level, I have come to refer to this as the mind your business tradition. Because sometimes I just need to mind my business. Like, I, as I just said, am not an attorney, right? So I have no business, like, in a meeting, giving somebody legal advice about something that I don't do. Like, it's inappropriate. It's not, you know, like, even if I was an attorney, right now I'm not your attorney. So, you know, like, to just really keep it about me and my experience that I have to offer to the next sick and suffering addict, you know. When I'm a person that has clinical depression, and so when I got into the rooms, I was told a lot of things by a lot of people about what I should do about my clinical depression, right? And I'm new, and I was young. I was like 17, 18. Like, so the combination of those two things, like, I didn't really know enough to sort of disregard that. So for, like, 3 years, I tried to step work away some, like, medical disease, which is kind of ridiculous if you think about it. And that, you know, like, we just have no, like, we don't know what effect, like giving some medical advice is going to have on another person, you know? And we don't know what another person's journey is going to look like, you know? And to have the arrogance and the audacity to think that, like, what works for me is what's going to work for you, like, that's just not how this works, you know? I have to find my journey, and we all have to find ours, and that's not what we do in the rooms. So that's why I've called it the mind your business tradition, because it's just, it's dangerous, you know, and it's irresponsible. And the extension of that then comes to me when I hear someone giving advice to me about something that I know they're not a professional, is to take it with a grain of salt, you know, and to go and do what I was taught to do, which is if I have a legal problem, seek an attorney, you know, and to go to outside places and to come to NA for what NA does best. You know, NA does a lot of things really well, and that's enough, you know, like, that's enough for me. So that's kind of what I have to say on the tradition, which is really cerebral and doesn't really connect to a lot of, like, heartstrings, but it's a really important tradition, and it, you know, it's something that we all need to individually be mindful of when we're interacting with others in our groups. And when we're doing service. So when it comes to the eighth step, shifting the focus a little bit here, the eighth step, if you need a reminder, is we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. I got clean pretty young, and I was hit pretty early on with one of these, like, pink clouds, and I just had this, like, zeal for recovery. There's a woman that I'm sharing a hotel room with this weekend, and she's got that same, like, fervor and passion about recovery, and it's just, I see myself in her and that zeal that she has. And so I came in, and I was all about NA, you know, I mean, after, like, a fuck ton of resistance, like, we'll just skip over that part, but there was a lot of kicking and screaming, but, like, once I was here and I was on board, like, I was really on board, because we're addicts, right, so it was, like, and yay, like, now all the way to the other extreme. So I was, like, really into working steps and reading the literature, and when I read the literature, I felt as though someone had been peering into my window, you know, I just identified a lot with the literature, and I've always been kind of a book person, so it worked for me, and so I started working through my steps, and, you know, made my way, got to the fourth step, and really, you know, that was a big process for me, because the way I was raised, we didn't talk about anything. I always say, like, we didn't argue in my family, we just didn't talk, like, we got along great because nobody ever talked about anything. And everything was just so internalized. And, like, to really force myself to sit down and look at everything and get it on paper was a big challenge for me. I mean, in a lot of ways, I'd been taught to be invisible and to not make waves and to not speak up and to just exist. And I took a lot of comfort in that invisibility. You know, it's really easy for me to just blend in with a crowd and not, you know, like I can just go unnoticed, or I can be, you know, like whoever, like we do that, right? We take on personalities. We're kind of chameleons. But to sit down and look at like the fact that I exist and I affect other people and here's my patterns and to write it down on paper, like that was big for me because it meant like I have a mark in this world. Like what I do affects others. And so I'm working through my fourth step, and I was able to like sit down and do my fifth step with a loving sponsor who I chose because we shared a name. So I sat down with another woman named Colleen, and was able to do my first fifth step with her. And it was a really beautiful experience for me, you know, to be able to share all these parts of myself that for so many years I'd kept hidden. And I continue to work a sixth and a seventh step, and I think that there's these like natural breaks or like pause points in the steps. And for me, after I hit seven, I just kind of sat for a long time, like a real long time. We won't talk about how long, but you know, I don't know if it was just that I felt like I was like recovered enough. I know that's another workshop that I think is happening right now about only hams are cured. God bless whoever came up with that topic. But I think in a lot of ways, like I felt like that, like I'm good, you know, like I'm good. You know, I worked, you know, 1 through 7, like pretty well. And I felt like, okay, you know, at that point I had a job, I'd gone back to college, you know, like material stuff started happening for me. I was like relating with people on a good level. And the thing that that I didn't really notice by not working the eighth step is how much guilt and shame I was still carrying around. And it's just like there, like in everything that you do, it just like seeps in and it's there, like it just becomes a second skin, you know? And when I was reading about this step, it says like, the purpose of this step is to free ourselves from that guilt and shame. It's like the second sentence in the thing. And I'm like, holy shit, you know? And that's not easy to talk about, so. But for me, it's like, there's just so many levels to it, you know? Like, when I sit down to, like, make a list of those I've harmed, you know, and, like, start to become willing to make amends, like, that means I don't get to hide out in that guilt and shame anymore, you know? Like, I didn't realize that, like with my family, for example, my relationship with my father's side of the family was strained greatly through my using and my active addiction. And however long I've been clean, like, I'm still that person to them, right? Like, I'm still the person that people watch their purse, you know? I don't get money in the cards that come. Everybody else gets money in the cards. And I don't need the money. It's not about the money. It's about, like, I've been clean 14 years and still the $10 doesn't come in the card. So, okay. You know, it's like I was the valedictorian of my college after I got clean, and it doesn't matter. In my father's side of the family's eyes, like, I am a drug addict, you know? And what I didn't realize is that, like, I also am putting myself in that role with them. You know, like, I'm also limiting myself by taking comfort in the fact that, like, I don't necessarily have to try hard with them because they're just going to see me as who they're going to see me as, you know? And, like, so it became this, like, blanket that started to feel a little bit comfortable. You know, if you have depression, you know that sometimes, like, it can feel a little good, you know, to, like, crawl under the covers for, like, days at a time. And so to really recognize that, like, I have to be willing to let go of some of that and see that, like, anything is possible for me. Like, I don't have to limit myself to that shit anymore. Like, I'm not that person today. Like, I'm just not. And that's hard to, like, look at. And I am the kind of person, or the kind of addict that, like, I would never admit that I made a mistake, like, ever. And it was stupid, right? Because, like, sometimes, obviously, people just make mistakes. But I, like, really was one of these really stubborn people to interact with. I mean, I still kind of am, but. So to, like, make a list of people that I harmed, like, that goes so counter to, like, everything I was, like, taught to do. Like, never admit fault or weakness, you know? Like, and when I was out there using, I had this, like, list in my head about, like, things I was taking to the grave, you know, like things I would never tell anyone, You know, and sometimes some shit would happen, I'd be like, damn, that's one more thing on that list, you know? And like, I don't have to have that list, you know? Like, I don't have to do that. And making a list of people I've harmed, you know, like, goes completely, it breaks through that, you know, it knocks it wide open. And when I was sitting down looking at this, I realized for me, like, the biggest struggle was that, like, I didn't want to, even though I'd, like, worked a fourth step and I'd worked a fifth step and, like, I'd gotten it all out on paper, like, I didn't want to look at it again. Like, I didn't want to look at, like, these dark, ugly things that, like, I thought were just so horrific. And so when I got a new sponsor a couple years ago, I did, you know, it was like I started doing some writing about like some of the stuff on that list of shit that I was, you know, I'd been clean a long time, but I still had that list, you know, of shit I was going to take to the grave. And I don't want that list anymore. Like, I don't want to be bound by that. Like, I don't want to be stuck by that persona anymore. And even just like that process of like letting myself write something down, like, you did this. Like, you did this to someone, you know? Like, you're not going to do it today, you know? That's fine, but, like, you did this, and it had an effect on someone. It was really hard for me because, like, it was hard. So when I think about this step, I think of it being, like, a big mirror that I just stand up in front of, like, totally naked, you know? And, like, when I do that at first, like, I'm going to cringe and, like, wince and, like, look away and, like, think about, like, all the ugly, horrible parts. But, like, the longer I stand there and, like, the longer I let myself sit with that stuff, like, I realize a lot of things. Like, one, it's not so bad, right? Like, the stuff that, like, I'm holding that I think is, like, so big and devastating, like, the more I sit with it, I'm like, you know, I was a kid and I was a drug addict and I didn't have any tools and, like, it's not so bad. And then I can get into a little bit of forgiveness for myself, you know? And it's just crazy how just sitting and looking and being with something can take all of the power out of it, you know? For so long, I spent so much energy, like, not dealing and not looking and just shoving away and just, and I'm fine, and I'm fine, and we're Irish Catholics, so we're always fine, and we're happy, and, you know? And just to, like, put it there. And not say I'm going to, like, fix anything or do anything, but I'm just going to, like, write it down, what actually happened, what I actually did, and just have it sit there, you know? Like, I didn't realize how much of that shit was still affecting, like, my day-to-day life, you know? Yeah, it's kind of crazy, this program, right? So then I get to look at, like, becoming willing to, like, make amends for the stuff, and it's really important to, like, separate the ninth step from the eighth step, you know, because if you think about the ninth step, you'll probably never do the eighth step, which is what I think part of, like, why I sat on it for so long, just because the thought of, like, facing people was just way too much for me, you know? Like, I just couldn't handle it. And the beautiful thing about the eighth step is, like, I don't have to yet. Like, I only have the strength, like, I only need the strength to do the task at hand, which right now is to, like, look at it and become willing, you know? And I'm so grateful for my sponsor, because she has taught me the value of a living amends. And, for me, that looks like a lot of different things. Like, for me, sometimes it looks like missing a service commitment to go and make a living amends to my 88-year-old grandmother who just sold her house. So even though, you know, the relationship is not great, I showed up and I put her shit in boxes and I helped carry those boxes to her new house. And, like, I can do that, you know? And whether it makes a damn bit of difference to them or not, like, it matters to me that I show up and I do those things. Because I know that, like, I can be of use to people, you know? You know, it's just... it's just a really, like, beautiful step. And it takes a lot of courage and a lot of love and trust. This step really, I feel like, depends so greatly on the previous steps. You know, I really need the honesty that I learned in the first step to just be able to, like, look at all of it, you know, and I need the courage and the trust and the faith and a higher power that I got from, like, 2 and 3 to be able to know that, like, it's okay. If none of those people ever forgive me, like, it's okay, you know, and I can be okay with that, you know, and I strive like hell to not repeat the same mistakes. And just to take my life in a different way, because I can't go and undo what I did, you know. but I can sure work hard to make sure that I don't make those same mistakes again. I think that's pretty much all I have on this topic. I'm really grateful to have been asked to speak. I think part of the process for me in working with this stuff was really just sitting down and looking at it. And I was kind of a bitch to those around me while I was doing that, because I was in my head a lot about what to say or what to do about this. But anytime I'm asked to speak, like, the most beautiful part for me is like the part that you guys never see, like the part that I'm sitting down on the patio just like working through some stuff, you know, and like making notes and like really connecting like with my higher power and with the literature and like with the stuff. And like, if any of that comes across when I actually talk, like, cool. But like, if not, like, this really cool thing happened for me, so that's nice. But I'm really grateful to be here. I hope everyone has a wonderful convention. Thank you so much for letting me share.